Before we start the show, I want to thank the thousands of you, the thousands who have read This Book Will Make You Dangerous. Many of you have told me that the book's unique way of exploring fear, confidence, and purpose has had a lasting impact, that it's much easier for you to get clarity and direction about what really matters and what you want to do in this lifetime. It's also amazing to hear that quite a few of you have read it multiple times and even bought copies for friends. So thank you again. Just in case you weren't aware, I created a free companion video course for the book. And in these videos, I walk you through the big takeaways and practices from each chapter. And I even cover some extra stuff that's not included in the book. Information on how to access the course is in newer versions of the book. And if you own an older version of the book and you don't know how to access the course, just hit me up via the contact form at triplanier.com and we'll get you all set up. And one last thing, if you're one of the thousands who have already read the book, please consider leaving an honest review on Amazon so that others can decide if it's right for them. Again, thank you so much for reading This Book Will Make You Dangerous. And now let's start the show.
You are listening to The New Man Beyond the Macho Jerk and the New Age Wimp. Your host is men's coach and group facilitator, Trip Lanier. He is joined in the studio by the show's producer, Casey Capshaw.
Why does the macho jerk usually get the girl, while the nice guy is left behind? What cost are you paying for ignoring your anger? And how is it true that the world needs more anger and less aggression? This week, we're talking with Robert Masters about anger, aggression, and how the quote, nice guy, is more insidious than you might think. Welcome to The New Man. I am sitting here with Robert Augustus Masters today. He's an integral psychotherapist, an author, group leader, and I got to witness his work last night, and I'm going to call him a badass, too. I think that fits. I want to know, where were you 10 years ago when I was emotionally constipated and needed somebody to help me work through some stuff? I just like, wow, oh, here he is. Now I could have really used you a lot more back then. So I'm glad to have you back on the show. You are our first repeat guest.
Oh, thank you.
So welcome back.
Thank you.
So yeah, I went to a men's group that you led last night. And one thing that struck me was that as we moved around the room and issues of anger or sadness, frustration, hostility, aggression, all this kind of stuff came up, that I recognized there were some myths in the room. There were some beliefs that I should keep this pushed away. I should keep this pushed down. And what I noticed you do was welcome that into the room. And I saw a lot of confusion for guys.
Well, what I was doing was addressing two things. One was each man's desire to open up, to get more in touch, and also his resistance to doing that. Because for many men, there's a sense that it's not okay to go into feeling very deeply.
Well, let's just start there. Why would I want to feel?
Because it makes you more alive, more connected, more grounded, more present.
Okay. And so I'm imagining, if I'm a guy, and this is, I'll just speak my experience. I was going through a phase, let's say 10 years ago, where I was becoming more and more numb, more and more, I won't even say agitated. I just was losing energy and losing zest for life. I was actually not wanting to feel something, and I was being exhausted by pushing something down. Is that something that
you resonate with? Because it takes a lot of energy to hold things in. And many men have a sense that they have to keep it in to be more masculine, to be more attractive to women, to seem like they've got it more together. And in that, they're shutting themselves off from the little boy in them, their own child side, which keeps them estranged from their vulnerability, which is a real problem, especially in relationship.
Right. And I'm imagining, if I'm a guy out there, why would I want to be vulnerable?
If you want to be with women to any depth, you're going to have to be vulnerable. And most men want to have relationships with women.
Okay. So if I'm vulnerable, what does that really mean?
It means you're transparent. Your emotions show. You're not defensive. You're just open. and you're alive, and if someone looks in your eyes, they can see the aliveness, and they can sense that.
Okay, so it doesn't mean that I'm a pussy if I'm vulnerable. It actually means quite the opposite, that I have strength to be able to stand in this place of openness?
Well, if it means you're a pussy, that's your own interpretation. Many men have that sense of being a pussy if they're soft, they're tender. And the trouble is, some men make a virtue out of that, you know, of being relatively soft,
the nice
spineless,
guy.
The nice guy, the one whose testicles are always hidden in the back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And that creates real problems.
Okay. And so, yeah, there's that association that I was making, is that if I'm vulnerable, I'm soft, I'm...
We men often associate being soft with being weak.
Right.
And we weren't born like that, but we've incorporated that. We've assimilated that usually from our father, sometimes our mother. So we grow up thinking that's what we have to be like. Then we're in a double bind when women want us to be more open, more tender, more vulnerable, because we don't feel safe then.
Okay.
And yet, ironically, there's a deeper safety in being vulnerable and soft.
I'm just present to, there's an opportunity here to redefine what vulnerable is. There's an opportunity to redefine what a healthy relationship or a healthy version of anger is. And we'll go into that in a minute too, because that's where I saw another block. To kind of recap the vulnerability piece, it's if I'm vulnerable, it doesn't mean that I'm a pussy. It doesn't mean that I'm soft or I'm the nice guy or whatever. It actually means that I still have connection to my balls, my truth. I'm still showing up fully in the world, but I'm also able to be impacted or...
If you keep your dignity during that, a lot of men lose their dignity when they get vulnerable. They collapse. That's not true vulnerability. That's a submission. It's a collapse. Real vulnerability means I'm transparent. I'm open. All my emotions are available to me, tip of my tongue, so to speak, but I haven't lost my dignity as a man. You saw in the group last night, a lot of men were collapsed. Their shame was kicking in. Their heads were hanging forward. It's like they've been punched in the guts, kicked in the balls.
Right.
And their vulnerability initially was that was the wounding of a little boy. What I'm looking for is men who are in touch with that and also who can maintain vulnerability when they're in their full manhood. They can stand tall in it.
We don't have a lot of role models. Is there anything out there in a movie or a character that we can both point to?
In a somewhat glamorized sense, I would say like a film like Braveheart shows that. In Gladiator 2, where the protagonists in both cases were a very powerful warrior type of guys who also had heart. They were soft in a certain way. There was a longing in them. You could sense there was something else going on besides being the tough guy, you know, played by Stallone or Schwarzenegger.
Right.
It was a deeper type of man.
He had more dimension to
him. Yeah, more dimension.
It just takes strength to be more vulnerable. It takes real fortitude to be able to stand there and be like open and be able to take whatever may come.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to have me more accessible to others. That's going to have me more accessible to women, and I want to be in relationship with women. You're saying that's the road to move towards. How does that impact relationship?
It makes you more trustworthy, because if I'm her and when you speak, your words are congruent, resonant with the feeling I get from you, I'm going to trust you more. I'm going to not say to myself, hey, he's just in his head. I'm going to sense that you are actually grounded. When you say you're angry or sad, I'm going to feel it when I look at you and I sense you. And I automatically will trust you more then.
And the action hero version is the, not to worry, I will take care of everything.
Yes, yes.
I'm impenetrable and nothing.
And my voice will betray no emotion, no quiver. And if I talk extra loud, I'll make sure that no one can tell I'm quivering inside and I'm scared fucking shitless. Right? It's a good acting job. Many men act it so well, they forget it's a role. They think that's them. They identify with a role.
Well, that's what I saw last night, was the offering of a new possibility for these men that you had talked about that maybe were collapsed. And it was like, hey, wait a second, you can step more fully into this, not have to be the action robot guy.
You saw the way I did it, in part, was each man who was in that position had to take a hold of the little boy in him, his own vulnerability and tenderness, hold that close, and feel a sense of true protection of that element of himself. In other words, if someone tried to mess with that child, they'd be in great trouble with this fellow, because he had his power. And in that, he could feel himself as a protector. Instead of letting the child and him run the show, drive the car, so to speak, the child's in the back seat playing, he's out front being a man, taking charge, but he hasn't lost touch with the child. The child's still in intimate connection with him.
I love that how you helped someone see that, where it may be a challenge for them to step up and protect themselves. You would ask the question of like, so what if another child was in the room and someone was doing something to this child?
Yeah.
And there was immediately, they kind of tap into something like, no way. I would not fucking let them. So, okay, so what would have you not protect the child in you to do this?
That's a necessary step off. And a lot of men will not protect the child in them, because that didn't happen when they were kids, and it was often too scary to stand up for themselves, so it's too big a deal. But when I say imagine someone else your child or a friend's child being violated, what would you do? And invariably, the answer is, I would do whatever it took. I say, now, feel that feeling right down to your balls. Imagine that's little you. What do you do? And often the man will have an instantaneous response.
Yes.
He gets really angry. He's forceful. But if he waits a little too long, he'll get it back into his head and go, yeah, well, but you saw some men last night doing that, dissociating, separating out from the experience to be safe.
What is it about their own anger that keeps them from owning their anger for themselves?
Usually because they associate being angry, and this is from childhood, they associate being angry with getting hurt, being in danger, the loss of love. So their expression of anger for them means the loss of something, it means danger. In other words, it's not safe. It's safer to get angry for someone else. But eventually it comes back to them. And when most men get in touch with that, there's an enormous rage, but it's a healthy rage because their tears are there too. It's not just this violent, I'll get even. It's heartbreaking. Mm. They're crying at the same time they're raging because there's something got lost when they were little and they can feel the loss. And the good news is they're starting to reclaim territory they fled, which was their own vulnerability when they were a child.
What are some of the fears that go along with the myths about anger?
Well, in part, we mistake anger for aggression. And for me, aggression means attack. So if I'm being aggressive with you, I may be loud, heated, red-faced, yelling at you, but I'm also out to attack you. I'm out to belittle you, put you down, hurt you. Could be physically, could also be non-physically, but I'm out to get you. I'm not vulnerable. If I'm angry at you, I could be loud, heated, red-faced, yelling, really forceful, but I haven't lost touch with my caring for you. I may not look caring, but it's still there. It's a healthy anger. I'm not putting you down. I'm not blaming you, but I am pissed. Mm-hmm. And I'm underlining what I'm saying with a lot of force because I want to get through to you. I don't want you to kind of deflect, bypass it, put it back on me. I want you to hear me. So I'm underlining what I'm saying with my anger, but it's for a good purpose.
Yeah, don't go play in the street.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I don't want you getting hurt, and I'm very upset and angry that you would play in the street, but it's coming from the loving place of, I don't want you to get hurt.
And the same could apply to a relationship. Say if your partner or friend is really slipping, they're not hearing you, you could just be really angry and lay it on the line with them. And that's a caring anger. Whereas if you're putting them down for and calling them an idiot or rolling your eyes at them, there you go again. What are you doing? They're going to defend themselves because they can feel the aggression. They can feel the attack. So it's very important to separate anger and aggression.
What does it look like to just be angry? Can we take a deeper cut on that?
It means being fiery and vulnerable at the same time.
Okay.
There's a force to it. Like anger to me is moral fire. It can be very, very intense. And without anger, we're left disempowered. So anger is a very essential emotion. It also is the guardian of our boundaries. So someone who isn't out of touch with their anger can be overrun easily. Then their way of defending themselves, say if I'm a woman, I don't have my anger on tap. I use my sexuality in sloppy ways to kind of protect myself, to control my environment. Whereas if I'm in touch with my anger, I don't have to do that. I don't have to get seductive to control my environment.
You just say no.
I can be straight and say no. Stop. And my energy says it too. It's not just a sweet, nice, no, don't do that. It's forceful. No.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an impact. And most of us, especially women, were not taught how to say a clear, healthy no.
Yeah, I'm going through this and I'm imagining the nice guy or the nice girl that doesn't want to upset anybody. But in the meantime, they're the last person they're going to stand up for.
And their yes lacks integrity. So, you know, we have the myth of consenting adults, say for certain activities, sexual and otherwise, where we think, okay, she said yes, I said yes, so it must be fine to go ahead. We're two adults, we're grown-ups. It's bullshit. They're not grown-ups. They're adulterated children. Mm. And their yes lacks integrity, it lacks authenticity, because they can't say no. They'll say yes for the wrong reasons. I want to please you. I want to get a little bit of that goodie over there if I submit to you.
I'll tolerate this in order to get that.
Get that.
But it doesn't come from a place of, I have the choice to say no, therefore I can say yes. It's the only thing I can say is yes.
That person is afraid of the consequences of saying no.
And I'm imagining if I'm the nice girl or I'm the nice guy out there that and you probably know who you are or what it feels mm-hmm. like to be that. Wait a second. The pathway to getting more right with myself is actually dealing with my anger? Mm-hmm. But I'm not angry.
I remember one spiritual teacher a long time ago telling his students everyone had a chief characteristic that ran their lives. And he said to one of the students of his, a disciple, this is Gurdjieff, he said to the guy, your chief characteristic is that you're chronically angry. And the guy says, I'm not angry.
I'm not fucking angry.
Not me.
But yeah, a lot of those nice people that I know, that the nice guy or the nice girl, the last thing that kind of pops up on the radar for most people about them mm-hmm. is that they would be angry. They've done such a good job of pushing it down. Yeah. So what if I am the nice guy and I'm wanting to be more authentic and more, I want to bring more integrity to my relationship.
Well, remember the nice guys in the group last night?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had them get up and consciously be nice, and invariably they had resistance to doing it because now I was saying, do consciously what you do unconsciously. Go around the room and be nice. And it created a lot of laughter in the room, a little bit of gag reflexes kicking in. And then they got sick of it. And I said, no, be direct, be authentic. And they were able to do it pretty quickly in most cases.
Yeah, and that nice guy thing was like this sugar coating of things, not really being with what is or allowing anything that wasn't unpleasant.
And the answer is not to be the opposite of nice, to be mean and hostile. It's just to become more authentic. To say, here's what's really going on.
It reminds me of nice guys don't get the girl or whatever the saying mm-hmm. is. The jerks get the girls. And so, well, I'm the nice guy, so now I'm going to act like the asshole to get the girl. But mm-hmm. what is happening there for the guy that's selling? I guess he's selling himself out. The nice guy is because he's not.
He is. And his testicles aren't in sight. And his spine is soft. It's too limp. He's not standing up for himself. So he's unattractive in that. The other guy's attractive in a very coarse way. He may be very dense, crude, pornographically inclined, but he's got juice.
Mm-hmm.
And his sexual energy is obvious. And it's coarse, crude, but at least it's out front. The other guy's got his hidden. In some ways, he's more insidious than the first because it's hidden. Mm. And I would actually, I wouldn't trust either, but I trust the nice guy even less because he's the one that's likely to turn very strange at some point. And what will emerge will be very dark because it's been kept in the dark for so long.
Mm.
You keep an animal in a cage long enough, it behaves badly when it gets out, which is not the animal's fault. It's the caging.
Yeah.
The nice guy is repressing so much.
I think that's huge there, that the nice guy, he's the one trying to get it right. Mm-hmm. He's the one trying to be acceptable mm-hmm. and confined and managed so you'll like him more. But the end result, the impact, is that we don't trust him as much.
You know what he's doing? He's not being nice to his own core feelings. In a strange way, even though he's not outwardly violent in any way, I would say that he's violating his own internal reality in many ways. He's violating his anger by keeping it in a cage. And of course it behaves badly when it's let out. Then he can say, oh, see, I got angry. Look at the damage it did. Therefore, anger is something we have to keep in. When in fact, it's not how it is. He's violated his own anger. Mm-hmm. In some ways, the real work we have to do is to take our hostility, our aggression, every other diseased offspring of mishandled anger and convert it back into anger. It's an odd thing to say. I'm sort of saying so many words. The world needs more anger, especially coming from the heart. Not more aggression, but more anger. So a lot of my work is to help men, especially, take their aggression, not get rid of it, but convert it back into the original anger. Then I see what they're really pissed off about. And once you deal with anger at that level, the tears come, the shame is exposed, because a lot of men have shame around all this. Everything's exposed, so the man is emotionally naked and can be worked with deeply.
Yeah, the word I get is transmutation. Take that poison, work with it, actually be with it, and be able to express it in that healthy way of just that pure anger. Set the fucking boundary.
Exactly.
Do not tolerate this in your life anymore.
And to really work with anger skillfully, we have to grow up in a very deep sense. We can't just, okay, now I'm going to express it. That's great. Because we can be very sloppy with expressed anger.
Yeah.
Many people will repress it. The nice guy represses it. But the next stage, not next stage, it's a parallel stage. I would call it anger out. We vent. We cut loose. It can get very sloppy, and we can glorify it. Oh, I'm just letting my anger out. I had someone in a group once slap someone else across the face. I said, what the hell are you doing? She said, Robert, you said not to hold back our emotions. She had abused my instruction. Mm-hmm. I did not say to act out.
Right.
Higher stage of anger would be what I call mindfully held anger. That means you observe it, you sit with it like you're on a meditation cushion, you feel all the sensations of it, the color, the topography, the shape of the anger. You become intimate with it internally, but you don't express it. It's good to learn that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Buddhist practice in some ways. Highest level for me is heart anger. That means I can be fully expressively angry, but I'm compassionately present.
Mm.
Quite difficult, but doable. And I think it's worth practicing. Even if it only happens 1 or 2% of the time, it's worth holding that as a possibility and practicing it. So let me say, if you're angry at Casey or a friend or partner, you let it fly, but you don't forget that you care about that person. Because right. If you start putting them down, they're going to shrink, they're going to push back, they're going to defend themselves, and there's no dialogue.
Visit triplinear.com and let us know what you think of the New Man podcast. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening.